This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. It's 7:05 a.m. on Thursday, the 24th of March. I'm Shazana Mukhtar together with Wong Xiaoning. No, she's not here now, but she will be in later for the breakfast grill. Who is here now with me is Tan Chin Lee and Koo Soo Chuang. First, as we always do, let's recap how global markets closed yesterday.
Yesterday, U.S. market Dow and Nasdaq both down 1.3%, S&P 500 down 1.2%, Asian market Nikkei up 3%, Hang Seng up 1.2%, Shanghai Composite up 0.3%, STI up 0.4%, FBM KLCI up 0.8%.
So what a study in contrasts, red in the U.S. and green over here in Asia. To find out what's moving markets, we have Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank. Vishnu, good morning. Can I start with a bit of a question on bonds? You know, we've seen global bond markets suffer from unprecedented losses since peaking last year, with the Bloomberg Global Aggregate Index falling 11%, the biggest loss since 1990. I mean, given the volatility in the market and investors' search for safe havens, you know, have bonds lost their safe haven asset status?
I mean, that's a good question. And really, the thought behind it is what the forces driving bonds right now are, and also the definition of the bonds themselves. I think at the end of the day, U.S. Treasuries will retain some of the safe haven allure, but I think there are a lot of conditions that has to be a severe risk-off situation where markets then, go into that flight to safety. But we also need to be aware that we're under very, very strange circumstances where, despite the probability of a stagflationary shock, or maybe because of it, but despite the geopolitics that's swirling, you've got a very aggressively hawkish Fed. So typically, when there's a lot of geopolitical risks, I think policymakers take a step back. But now, the Fed is leaning in, and in fact, they've just flagged, sooner rather than later, sort of that Kokomo Fed thing. Let's do more sooner, 50 basis point hikes, and a balance sheet runoff that could start earlier. So there are two factors here that add to the volatility. One is the Fed raising rates very aggressively can brutally lift yields in the absence of overriding fear from war. The second factor is, if the Fed starts draining liquidity from the system sooner, that's to say not roll over its maturing bonds, it's not going to buy bonds. And so a very crucial support for the bond market is starting to fade. And I think that realization is also playing into the severe volatility that we're witnessing.
Yeah, that's the narrative from the Fed, Vishnu. But what's Mizuho Bank's stance on whether the Fed can maintain that aggressive hiking schedule?
It's a very precarious position for Mizuho Bank to bet against the Fed. our own position is not too far removed from what the Fed has suggested. We've for a long time thought it should be a so-called Kokomo approach, where they do more a lot sooner. And so up to 100 basis point hikes in the first half is clearly on the table. The Fed has implied 175 basis points of cumulative hikes by the end of this year. We are a little concerned that may be too aggressive a pace. So we are holding back somewhat on that, saying that it could be between 125 to 150 basis points instead. But really, this Fed has now changed some of the narrative and is looking at inflation as is rather than forward projections. So we need to see how this unfolds.
I'm going to ask your view about China and about their ambitious GDP growth target of 5.5% this year. But with the sporadic lockdowns in tier one cities like Shanghai and also rising commodity prices, do you think they'll be able to achieve this?
And that's a very good question. But our worries predate the lockdowns that we've seen. The 5.5%, in our view, was extremely optimistic. Not just because of the commodities costs, eroding away profits and hence, chipping away at the GDP growth, because we have some respect for the levers that China has to boost growth. So our real concern was China has not used those levers. In fact, despite what they've said about, taking off some pressure from the tech sector, we are very worried about all these maturities coming up for the property sector, because we haven't seen any real relief. And by relief, I want to be very specific. It's not just generic rate cuts, but allowing liquidity in the property sector to resume so that they can pay off all those that are due, whether it's to vendors or whatever. And that support hasn't come in. So if it constitutes 30% of the Chinese economy and it's not seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, we find it difficult to imagine that China can cruise to 5.5%. It's going to be a bumpy ride. And the underlying growth may still be around 4.5% for the time being.
At the same time, Vishnu, the PBOC is trying to weaken the yuan as well. What will happen if this is done too quickly? Could it trigger concerns about financial stability and see an exodus out of Chinese assets?
I mean, that's, hypothetically, if they did it really quickly, I think certainly that's going to be a risk. But we don't see that as the main risk at this point of time. I mean, on a trade-weighted basis, if you look at the renminbi, it remains extremely strong. And compared to other Asian currencies, you've seen that the renminbi hasn't fallen very much. In fact, it's been one of the more resilient currencies. So I think the PBOC has taken the lessons from the 2015 China meltdown to heart. And so despite all these headwinds, they're not in a rush to weaken the renminbi extremely. I think they're moderating it to be a little bit more aligned, but still more stable than its trading peers. So that's the evidence so far. But we really need to see what happens as we go down this road.
Yeah, and Vishnu, turning to Singapore, right? Inflation in February was quite a cool 2.2% on the year, but the Monetary Authority of Singapore suggested that there could be an upside risk to this. Do you think the MAS will change its tack on monetary policy, amend the exchange rate ban next month?
I mean, we are going for... sorry to overuse this term, but we're going for a Kokomo MAS. I think they're going to do a double-barreled move. So it's... two tequilas for the price of one. We're looking at a one-off appreciation, so to speak, a recentering of the midpoint higher, and that should lead to immediate Sing strength, and then also a steeper slope, mainly because the MAS actually sees that there could be further upside risk that may entrench, and they have also noted that the labor market is fairly strong with wages rising faster. So these are the usual red flags for them to be more aggressive.
And what's your stance on Malaysia, Vishnu? What do you expect Bank Negara to do?
I think Bank Negara has got a wider spectrum of options available, mainly because Malaysia is in a somewhat more privileged position where it is able to tap onto oil revenues to provide offset. So there's an entire spectrum they can explore depending on how far the subsidies can be pushed and the price impact may be dampened. Because if the main concern is the inflation expectations entrenching, Malaysia has got more levers to ensure it doesn't, but it does come at a high fiscal cost. And so that mechanics needs to play out against the BNM. We suspect the BNM can have a steadier pair of hands and do just 50 basis points of hikes this year. And that would be a compromise where it doesn't allow the fiscal position to erode too much either.
And speaking of that, actually, so has the recent move by the Fed to raise rates affected sentiment of our currency and fixed income markets? So in the short term, what kind of levels do you see the Malaysian ringgit and government bonds trading at?
I mean, that's really what we're looking at in terms of looking at the region. What obfuscates the picture is we've also got geopolitical risk that makes it even harder to price. Our sense is that in the first half, not just the Malaysian ringgit, but many other Asian currencies are going to be weaker. So we do see, I think, at least a 50% chance that your dollar ringgit can go to 430 levels. And as for the bond yields, the 10-year bond yields, I think 4% is not as far away as it seems if the Fed turns out to be as aggressive as they suggest, with the possibility of a 50 basis point hike as early as May alongside the liquidity runoff. So those are, I think, levels that are not very far away, even though they may be a tad uncomfortable.
Vishnu, thanks as always for speaking to us. That was Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank, giving us his take on some of the trends that he sees impacting markets, talking about that Kokomo effect by the Fed policy. He sees them taking it fast before they take it slow.
Yeah, I just, you know, in terms of Malaysia and to be localized, right? Yeah, we are in a privileged position because we never did cut as much as the rest of the world did. But yeah, and in terms of oil, I think $122 a barrel for Brent oil now. Trafigura reckons they could hit 150 by the end of the year, maybe beyond that as well. That backwardation effect will come into play. I think Malaysia is interesting because we don't have, we do have that luxury, but that that fiscal position remains worrisome. Don't know how far Tunku Zafrul can do in terms of, you know, just maintaining our subsidized petrol prices at this point.
Well, they are thinking about revising all these subsidies, so we're going to have to watch that space.
205, right, per litre. But yeah, I mean, I wonder if it does go up, how does it go up, and is it measured in terms of, you know, usage and the, you know, that kind of segmentation? Don't know how it's going to be done.
Well, we're not the only country. I mean, I guess the rise in oil prices, every country is kind of looking at how that's impacting them. And if we take a look at the UK, we see that UK inflation in February shot up faster than expected and hit a new 30-year high of 6.2%. On year in increases, and this is after a 5.5% rise in January, and it just worsens a historic squeeze on household finances. Britain now has the second highest annual inflation rate among the group of seven countries, behind only the US, and household energy bills, they're up almost 25% year on year.
Right now in March, it's freezing, you know, and gas, right? That's how homes are heated all across the UK. A lot of the gas comes from the Ukraine, you know, lest we forget, and Russia as well.
And you're right about that, actually, because
this is the fallout from these sanctions that are taking place. Because, you know, tit for tat, right? What does the Ukraine? What do the Russians do in terms of the gas supplies to Europe?
Yeah, that's right. Because the core inflation, which includes direct impact on food and energy costs, rose by 0.8 to 5.2%, which is the highest since March 1992. Which is quite drastic.
And I guess we were talking about how Malaysian government here is looking to cut subsidies. Over in the UK, UK Finance Minister Rishi Sunak announced that they're going to immediately cut fuel taxes, and they're looking at a longer-term tax reduction for workers. So starting from Wednesday evening, I suppose that was yesterday for them, fuel duty will be reduced by 5 pence per litre for 12 months, and this cut's going to cost the UK government £5 billion. So we'll be watching to see how different countries deal with the volatile oil prices. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.